Hello everyone, this is Bob Zeta. My amateur radio call sign is N1BLF, November 1, Bravo Lima Foxtrot. We'll be reading together today the digest format of CQ magazine for January 2011. CQ is published by CQ Communications Incorporated, 25 Newbridge Road, Hicksville, New York, 11801. This recording is a production of the Courage Anti-Ham System, 3915 Golden Valley Road, Golden Valley, Minnesota, 55422. It is for the use of eligible Anti-Ham members only. Any other use may violate copyright laws. Anti-Hams may be reached at area 763-520-0512 or at email address handyham@courage.org. Our website is www.handyham.org. Let's begin today with the CQ editorial by the editor Rich Mawson called W2VU. It's titled Transitions. Welcome to a new year and a new decade. Traditionally, a new year is a time to reflect on the year that has just ended and to look forward to what might be different in the year that is just beginning. It is a time of transition. And not always as simple as changing to a new calendar. Speaking of which, I hope you all have your new CQ calendar on your shack wall. For most of us hams, the year just ended was a tough one, both in terms of the economy and the sunspot cycle, which are sharing the unfortunate feature of being much slower to recover than any of us would like. On the other hand, there were some encouraging signs on both fronts, and both promise to continue slowly improving in 2011. We are in the process of a transition here at CQ as well. While your editor is the face of this magazine to its readers and writers and the general ham community, the advertising manager is the face of the magazine to the people who work in the ham radio industry. He or she is the person they hear from every month to make sure their company will be getting its message out to our readers, with whom they work on creating the details of an ad and whom they see at Hamfest, usually, along with me. Since I joined CQ nearly 20 years ago, either Arnie Sposato, call in to IQO, or Don Allen, W9CW, has occupied at least one chair in the advertising department here at CQ Communications. When I started, Arnie was ad manager for CQ and Don was ad manager for Popular Communications and Communications Quarterly. Over the years, each of them has left the company and later returned, and eventually ended up swapping hats, with Don in charge of advertising for CQ and CQ VHF, and Arnie running the show at PopCom. But one or the other has always been here, willing to share decades of knowledge of the amateur industry and the people who work in it. Therefore, it was quite a shock to the system last fall when, over the course of 2 weeks, both Arnie and Don informed publisher Dick Ross, called K2MGA, that they planned to retire by the end of the year. After a rocky start to looking for replacements, including one textbook case of how not to get hired, the stars finally came into alignment. A few flares popped off the sun, and we are extremely pleased to welcome a very well-known face in the ham radio hobby and industry, Chip Margelis, called K7JA, to be our new face to the industry as Director of Advertising, Sales, and Marketing for CQ Communications. Chip will be taking over the ad sales duties on CQ, CQ VHF, and Pop Communications, as well as coordinating marketing efforts for all of our products. Some of you may know Chip as a DXer, D-Expeditioner, and contester extraordinaire, as the public face of Yaesu for nearly 30 years, or more recently, as VP of Marketing for Heal Sound. Chip brings with him a tremendous depth of knowledge of the inner workings of the amateur radio industry, which will be of great value as he helps both current and prospective advertisers communicate most effectively with our readers. I'll look forward to working with Chip as a colleague. Still, it's going to be quite strange for quite a while not to be picking up the phone and calling Don or Arnie about this company or that product and having a new roommate at the Hamfest hotels. Don and Artie, it has been an honor and a privilege and a pleasure to work with both of you, and we will miss you greatly here in the hallowed halls of Hicksville. And there are a few more goodbyes as well. Speaking of Hamfest hotels, one of my most lasting memories of Dayton is the year that I roomed with then WPX award manager Norm Koch, WN5N. Norm was proudly from the Southwest, and that year he brought along some jars of homemade spicy salsa to give to certain staff members. We stored them in our hotel room until it was time to hand them out. Complication. When we came back from the show on Friday, we were greeted by a huge and unpleasant mess. It seems that one of his salsa jars, all by itself, had exploded while we were at Hara Arena. The cleanup was interesting. The housekeeper got an extra tip. And for some reason, everyone politely declined Norm's offer of a jar of homemade salsa. I am recounting this story because Norm became a silent key in November after several years of declining health. Because of that experience, though, thinking of Norm always brings a smile to my face. What better way to be remembered? Also leaving us in November was John Shampa, call K8OCL, the high-speed multimedia, that's HSMM editor for CQ VHF magazine, after a battle with cancer. I did not know John well, nor did anything of his ever blow up in my hotel room, but the few times that I did meet him, I was always impressed by his depth of knowledge about very complex technical topics, as well as his ability to discuss them in plain English with folks like me, who could only begin to scratch the surface. I was also impressed by his common sense, no-nonsense approach to dealing with issues. His expertise and insight will be missed by the entire amateur community as we lose a leader at the leading edge of amateur radio technology. Now about scaling back. Finally, since this is January, and many of us make New Year's resolutions to promptly ignore, here is one to try to help more of us stick around on the planet a little longer. And you can credit or blame my wife for this one. How about if we collectively resolve to each lose about 30 pounds in 2011? Now, some of you out there are skinny as rails, but we all know that the vast majority of us are not. 30 pounds sounds like a lot. It sure does to me, but it weighs out to an average of 2.5 pounds a month, a goal that many of us can achieve simply by walking more and eating less. One approach my wife and I have taken is to either share a meal when we eat out, or immediately put half of each serving aside to take home and eat the following day. It is, pardon the pun, a no-lose resolution. Even if you simply manage to maintain your current weight, you'll be no worse off at the end of the year than you are right now. And every pound that you do manage to lose will pay off in both short and long-term dividends. While we're on the topic, get regular colonoscopies as well. They can save your life. On that happy note, may your health, wealth, and DX totals all improve in the new year. 73 W2VU, Rich Mawson. I'll begin with the featured piece here, Bonded Anderson Power Poles, Keeping Your Contacts in Contact, by Gordon West, WB6NOA. Gordon uncovers a common problem with Anderson Power Pole connectors and finds a product that solves it. One of my well-seasoned students dropped by with a mobile transceiver mystery. On receive, the 40-watt dual-band mobile worked great. But on transmit, the radio growled through its mobile speaker, with the display intermittently dimming. On low power, the problem was not as bad, but on high power, it was easy to see the brownout conditions. First check was of the winding directly to the 12-volt battery. I expected to see a corroded battery connection, but it was squeaky clean. I carefully inspected the wiring run, including a great job of getting the wiring through the firewall, and everything looked shipshape. The next step was the bench check. I unplugged the ARES ready radio system from his multi-Anderson power pole outlet and took the equipment to the test bench. When I connected to my 12-volt Andersons, there was absolutely no problem of low voltage. Then it was back to the vehicle, with a close inspection of the 12-volt DC supply output Anderson power poles. I found the problem. The red and black pair of Andersons was not perfectly aligned, and the red battery positive Anderson power pole was recessed so slightly that a quick glance would miss the misalignment. And there is a photograph here on page 44 of the January 2011 CQ showing that. The red power pole had slid back just enough to create an intermittent condition on high power transmit, and the radio would cut out. Sound familiar, power pole users? As soon as I aligned the red and black Andersons, the problem was solved. How many times have we had red and black paired Andersons wiggle out of perfect alignment? Sure, the little black pin initially may achieve perfect alignment, but sometimes that pin drops out, or sometimes the pin is not included with the connectors, and just pressure alone on red and black Andersons may alter alignment. The problem is solved. Power Works. It's spelled P-O-W-E-R-W-E-R-X. Power Works now offers permanently bonded red slant black Anderson power pole sets. Quoting, "Our bonded power pole sets are ultrasonically welded to guarantee correct configuration and elimination of the need of that roll pin to keep them perfectly aligned." Close quotation. Was the comment from Power Works. I can put away my hot glue gun. Just remember to keep red on the right when viewed from the rear, and you are set to go. The Power Works bonded connectors start at $11.99 for a set of 10. If you're interested more about that, you can go to this website. It's http://www.powerwerx.com. A thanks to Gordon West, WB6NOA. Gordon is a CQ contributing editor. His address is 2414 College Drive, Costa Mesa, California, 92626. If you'd like to email Gordon with comments, it's his call sign, lowercase, WB6NOA at CQ-amateur-radio.com. Our next featured category is Magic in the Sky by Jeff Reinhardt, call AA6JR, Alpha Alpha 6 Juliet Romeo. And he titles it, guess what? Happy New Year! If you've recently earned your ham radio license, say in the last 5 years or so, chances are good that you see your operating privileges as part of the overall mix that electronic devices play in your everyday life. Just like the cordless phone, the TV, DVR, and PC, amateur radio has its place in your life. If you've been licensed longer, up through 10, 20, or even more years of experience, you have seen a coming of age in consumer electronics that seems to continue accelerating with no end in sight in the consumer electronics world alone. The baby boom generation has witnessed an astounding explosion in technology that graduated from AM radio and black and white TV to today's high def and even 3D video, digital audio, and evolving refinement in home audio. In the past, the latter would often take the form of a component stereo with monster speakers and a room full of records, tapes, or CDs. Now all that media can be stored in your shirt pocket. My iPod currently carries just under 4,000 audio selections that would take over a week to play sequentially. That same device allows me to surf the web, make a phone call, check on financial markets, navigate via GPS, find a restaurant, oh yeah, and carry my electronic Rolodex wherever I travel. It does more, but you get the idea. So, have we created a new age? As electronics hobbyists, we have had a significant role in creating today's devices that keep information and communication in all its forms literally at our fingertips. It's relatively easy to connect the dots of ham radio's beginnings and advancements from demonstrating new technologies and modes up through popularized FM repeater operations, telephone patches, worldwide packet radio text messaging, satellite communications, APRS geolocation, and blending technologies to create new exciting applications. Some of the advancements came directly from ham experimenters, while others came about from smart manufacturers who actually listened to imaginative hams at conferences and events such as the Dayton Hamvention, where someone like you or me could start a sentence with those wonderful words, "What if?" As a self-appointed observer of the human condition, I sometimes take the opportunity to watch how people interact with today's technology and wonder what and where the next advancement will be. As this is written, Microsoft has commenced a clever advertising campaign promoting its, quote, next greatest thing, close quote, by showing everyday people whose lives now revolve around their handheld communicator, including a bride walking down the aisle. While it may not have come to that yet, we're not very far away. I get to spend a lot of time at airports, and it's amazing to watch people walking, eating, and even using the restroom while glued to the latest information on their 3-inch by 2-inch screen. A group of kids can be seated together, but not an audible word is said. Instead, fingers are busily texting away. The moment a plane lands, there's a rush for the pocket or purse to reactivate the device around which many lives now revolve. To an extent, I'm guilty of some of the behavior listed above, but I have established some limits. This came about partially through the following experience. One evening, I was enjoying a restaurant dinner with my XYL and noticed a couple seated at the next table. From the time they were seated, she was working her phone, he was working his iPad, and other than a quick comment when ordering from the waitress, I don't think they interacted with each other verbally through the whole dining experience. Who knows? They may have been sending love poems to each other, but sadly, I'd be willing to bet they weren't. I know you're there. I can hear you breathing. I've attended meetings in conference rooms, large and small, where the speaker must compete with the attention of those present. It is common to see folks working their electronics at homes of worship during services. Perhaps they're paying unwitting tribute to the ancient gods, Hermes or Mercury, Are there limits on fractionally dividing our attention? What happens to the missed details? How would you feel if your doctor was texting while discussing your prognosis in a serious medical situation? In fact, there's a TV commercial on that too, folks. You've probably seen it. A local school superintendent informed me that some of his teachers interact with their students using their cell phones. You can't beat them, so why not join them? Here's your homework assignment via text message. What's the answer to this question? Text me A, B, C, or D. That raises the ante on another problem, specifically the gap felt by those economically disadvantaged. What happens if you can't afford the high-tech phones? Smelling the roses. Recently, while driving along a California's magnificent coastal highway, I passed an SUV with the rear passenger kids glued to the cartoon showing on the screens in front of them. Meanwhile, just to their right was a shoreline that people travel around the world to see. I'm not saying what they were doing was wrong, but I wonder if they may later lament the missed opportunity to take in nature's magnificence. He must be talking about Big Sur, folks. That's my guess. Perhaps they can go home and someday Google some photos of California Highway 1 and see those images on a 2x3-inch screen, which begs the question, is the virtual reality the new reality? Marshall McLuhan is best known for his presence and enduring take on communications. Quoting here, "The medium is the message," close quote. You can read and reread that quote and come up with many different interpretations, but after truncation, it brings you back to the original statement, genius. But let's dig a bit deeper. From that same paper, McLuhan went on, quoting, "The wheel is an extension of the foot. The book is an extension of the eye. Clothing, an extension of the skin. Electronic circuitry, an extension of the central nervous system." Close quote. The medium or process of our time, electronic technology, is reshaping and restructuring patterns of social interdependence and every aspect of our personal life. It is forcing us to reconsider and reevaluate practically every thought, every action, and every institution formerly taken for granted. Everything is changing. You, your family, your education, your neighborhood, your job, your government, your relation to the others. And they're changing dramatically. Now, in parenthesis, dear reader, this was written in the mid-1960s. The note was furnished by Alpha Alpha 6 Juliet Romeo. Close parenthesis. McLuhan's work was diverse, but always stimulating. Perhaps his Canadian perch gave him a wry perspective on the frenetic activity south of his border. That's us, folks. In the past, this column has paid homage to those scientists, experimenters, and technicians who made our communications hobby and industry what it is today. Against the cast of those pioneers, I might place Marshall McLuhan as the Tesla of his time, interweaving our human characteristics with the continuing advancements in communications technology. McLuhan died on December 31, 1980, just prior to the introduction of the cell phone and many other devices that today we consider necessities. It would be wonderful to get his take on how we find ourselves interacting with electronics in the intervening 30 years. Not even an eye blink against the backdrop of the cosmic time continuum. So the question is, are you ready to write the next chapter? As we embark on a new year, the point of this tome is to take some inspiration of the Roman god Janus, for whom the first month is named. If you recall your mythology, he had two faces, one looking ahead, one behind. He was often fittingly depicted at doorways. So, here we are beginning a new year and establishing the tempo of this new decade, where a year-old communications device is considered old tech. Like Janus, I will choose to select those new incoming elements that suit my purpose. I prefer items that have utility over those that are new just for the sake of being the latest and greatest. I will also look back and keep those things I value. I like single sideband, CW, analog FM, and the occasional item I can build or repair. So the question is posed, what hath God wrought? Indeed, as Samuel F.B. Morse tapped those famous words across a few miles of wire, a new world opened and the old way of communicating began to slip away. He may not have foreseen geosynchronous satellites and 24-hour news cycles, but he literally pressed the button that started the sequence. This new year will offer you many opportunities to enjoy this magnificent calling and communications that we share. Be it the art of conversation with a new friend, a hurried contest contact, a computer roundtable, or the rush of storm spotting, be sure to take the moment to reflect for just a moment on the true miracle that radio communications represents. Remember, too, that behind all that technology, there's a real, live human being, the same one you see in the mirror every morning. Okay, I think I'm now ready for another year of adding to the magic in the sky. 73 Jeff, AA6JR, Alpha Alpha 6, Juliet Romeo. Well, I think it's time to take a peek at the Ham Notebook. The author here is Wayne Yoshida. Call KH6WZ, Kilo Hotel 6, Whiskey Zulu. Testing, testing. Check everything before declaring the death of your radio. The story you are about to read is true. The names of the people and the companies involved in this story have been removed to protect the innocent and the inexperienced. This anecdote is not meant to make fun of anyone, but it is a good reminder that one should try to verify the basics before going through much confusion, stress, and frustration. And as I always say, if you don't understand something, seek the advice of your go-to friend at your radio club. I received a call for help from a friend having some trouble operating a newly purchased used all-band transceiver. She did read through the operating manual and follow the directions step by step. However, the rig just did not work like the book said. Since I was not familiar with the particular rig in question, I did a quick internet search to see if I could find an operating manual for the unit. During my search, I came across a YouTube video featuring a frustrated owner of the same make and model radio that my friend had. The poor chap said his radio had been sent back to the factory for service several times, and it still didn't work right, even though the service tag said the problem could not be duplicated. In parentheses, that is a nice phrase service centers use when they cannot find anything wrong with the unit. Close parenthesis. The general description of the problem, low power output. In the video, the station owner described what is happening, but does not show the complete station setup and does not describe the antenna nor any test instruments hooked up to show how he tested his rig. However, he does spend a lot of time describing for how long he was not able to use his brand new radio and how many times he sent it back to the factory for repairs. He really seemed frustrated with this whole thing, and I know how he must feel. Finally, after several minutes, he turns on the rig and shows the meter indicating about mid or three-quarters of the full scale steadily when he keys the microphone. He believes the meter should show 100 watts, which is the transmit power output specification and is mentioned in the colorful brochure. But wait, I get this funny feeling at the back of my neck. You know, sort of like that creepy, tingly feeling you get, or at least I get, as the state trooper approaches you from behind while you are exceeding the speed limit. After about 5 seconds of watching the video, I think the radio manufacturer is correct, and the rig is functioning normally. I am only 99.999% sure of my assessment, but not 100% sure. So I am not able to accuse the video author of having a short between the headphones, as a good friend sometimes says about people on the radio. This is my friend's way of saying the radio operator's brain is defective. He is not thinking correctly and does not know how to use his equipment. I've had that feeling. I usually try to be a bit more polite and have to ask some questions. By asking questions, I am forcing the confessed radio operator to carefully examine every operational step. This helps the person because this process eventually leads him or her to discover the path to correct something wrong. A psychologist might call this a path to self-discovery. Too bad the video is no longer posted. It was removed by author. That was a close quote. It was a great example of how frustrated people can become if they don't go over the basics. I hope the fellow didn't sell the rig to someone at a discounted price. It was probably a perfectly working unit. But let's get back on track. Let's get back to my friend with her problem. It really helps. No, I must insist that the radio in question is plugged into a power supply and turned on as these steps are performed. Also, if you are the helper, make sure the person doing all the knob twisting and button pushing is the person having the problem. The learner must perform these steps in order for this process to work correctly. If the transceiver is installed in the vehicle, take it out. Bring it into the house and plug it into the bench power supply. You will be much more comfortable learning the radio when you are in the house, since you can take frequent breaks and rest. Learning how to operate a rig requires some concentration. It's too late now, but you or your friend probably should have done all the testing before installing, right? Here is what we did one afternoon. 1. Check the front panel controls. What are the settings of each knob, button, or dial? 2. Check the frequency on the display and all the frequency-related controls and menu settings. Checking all menu functions is important because just about all modern transceivers have soft buttons that are software rather than hardware-driven. This is where most people goof when setting up a new radio. Since this is an HF through UHF transceiver, look for something called split operation, where the transmit frequency and the receive frequency are different. Make sure this feature is turned off, and make sure all variable frequency oscillators, there are usually two VFOs, are turned to the same frequency. 3. Go through the setup and operational sections of the manual. When I say go through, I mean perform each step on the powered-up rig. This will take some time. Relax. Take frequent breaks when fatigue begins. Take a walk or enjoy a beverage. If this means taking another day, make the time to do it later. As we did this, even I became frustrated, and we took a long break away from the radio. When we were relaxed, I asked some other questions about the rig and how and why she obtained it. Among a lot of other things, I remembered something that became the key to solving the mystery called "This Radio Does Not Do What the Book Says." I smiled because I knew I could resolve this whole mess in an instant and I would be a hero, since she had been trying to understand how to operate the radio for several months. I asked my friend to verify something. The conversation went this way. Me. This is a used radio, right? Her. Yes, the guy I bought it from spent a lot of time on the HF bands. The radio was working perfectly for him for a long time. Me. Let me see the radio again. Look in the book for something for me. Her. What do you want me to look for? Me. Something about microprocessor reset or restore to factory default. Something like that. Her. Okay, here it is. Me. Okay. Before we do this, do you have any frequencies or settings stored in the radio's memory? Because if you do, and we do a reset, all those settings will be erased. Her. Memory? No, I don't think so. Me. Okay, now press and hold. As she performed the microprocessor reset, the radio made some interesting noises and did nothing. This was actually a good thing in this case. We went through the steps again, and the radio now behaved exactly like the book said. It turns out that the previous owner spent a lot of time on HF nets and probably some time on 6-meter and 10-meter repeaters and had many custom settings for frequency splits and all sorts of things that my friend did not want or need. When all that memorized junk was deleted by resetting the radio's microprocessor, the rig worked exactly as expected. She now enjoys the HF bands on her daily commute to and from work. Let's get back to the video guy. I'm sure you are wondering about that video guy. I still do, too. My first guess, remember, he did not show us any of the settings or operating conditions of his station, is that the rig is in either the FM or AM mode. Here are the clues that might lead our video guy to solve his mystery. Most solid-state HF and HF slant VHF multi-mode transceivers are reduced power on AM or FM. In fact, the following specifications of this transceiver indicate this, even though the rig is advertised as a 100-watt transceiver. Power output, 160 through 6 meters, 100 watts. In parentheses, 25 watts AM carrier, close parentheses. 2 meters, 50 watts. In parentheses, 12.5 watts AM carrier, close parentheses. 70 centimeters, 20 watts. In parentheses, 5 watts AM carrier, end parentheses. Next, the needle on the front panel meter goes to some point and holds steady when he clicks and holds the push-to-talk button on the microphone. This probably means the mode switch is not on single sideband, because if it were, the needle would dance up and down with voice peaks. This is as far as I can go from the small amount of clues in the background of the video. This is the point of this month's installment of The Ham Notebook. Always verify and double-check everything against the operating manual before declaring something is wrong. Make sure your measurements or assessments follow any operating or testing conditions stated in the specifications table, such as operating temperature, supply voltage, mode, settings. Verify everything and do not assume anything. Is your power supply really supplying the required voltage during both receive and transmit? This can reduce the downtime of the new radio to 0 hours and may also save money if a service center charges a fee to evaluate the unit. Perhaps most important, this can prevent you or your friends from selling or giving away a perfectly working rig at a discounted price. Happy New Year! Signed, 73, Wayne, KH6WZ. Well, folks, this is Bob Zeta. My amateur radio call again is at N1BLF, November 1, Bravo Lima Foxtrot. Today's Digest format reading of a CQ magazine for January 2011 is a slightly shorter version than we usually put out for your enjoyment. At least we hope it's for your enjoyment. I ran into a problem with the magazine myself. We've been reading about things like that today. I never got the issue of CQ for January from CQ Communications. And here it is about the 10th or 11th of January right now at 6 o'clock in the morning, looking for a nice nor'easter to hit me. So pray with us together that the weather isn't all too bad. And I want to wish you a happy new year also. It's always a pleasure to read this material for you folks. Some of the articles are occasionally a challenge for me. One of these in particular was, only because of the way it's written. But I think it came out okay, and I thank you for your patience. You know, if anybody chooses to comment to me directly, you're welcome to do so. I'll give you my email address. It's my call sign, lowercase, N1BLF, at comcast.com. N1BLF@comcast.net. You can send a mail to me anytime. I'd be delighted to return back to you any comments that are positive and so forth. If you choose to comment directly to the Courage system, Pat can send me some comments from those of you who choose to suggest to me better ways to do what we try to do well. Hi, hi. 73s and thanks again. We've been reading CQ Magazine for January 2011 in digest format. It's a publication of CQ Communications Incorporated, 25 New Bridge Road, Hicksville, New York, 11801. This recording is a production of the Courage Handy Ham System, 3915 Golden Valley Road, Golden Valley, Minnesota, 55422. It is for the use of eligible Handy Ham members only. Any of these may violate copyright laws. Handy Hams may be reached at area 763-520-0512 or at email address, lowercase, handyham@courage.org. The Handy Ham website is www.handyham.org. Again, 73s, Bob Zeta, N1BLF, November 1, Bravo Lima Foxtrot.